Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
They've attacked us, sabotaged us, abducted us, murdered us. We're not the only people on this island, and we all know it.
So I guess I'm out of the book club.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back.
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 3, Episode 17, Catch 22. What book do you pack with you parachuting into the jungle of mystery? My name's Dave Gonzalez, and I'm bringing House of Leaves just to mess with whoever finds my corpse.
My name's Joanna Robinson, and I'm bringing Wicked Plants by Amy Stewart because I don't want to die eating the wrong thing.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I am bringing Michael Crichton's The Lost World, because, like Dave, I'm looking to confuse people, both in bringing a sequel, and I would like them to think that there are dinosaurs on this island.
Maybe there are dinosaurs on this island. We don't know for sure yet.
We haven't seen proof that there aren't dinosaurs on this island yet. I'm just saying.
You are listening to the Storm of Lost Rewatch podcast. We are rewatching the ABC series Lost episode by episode, week by week. We are up to season 3, episode 17, catch 22. If this is your first time joining us, you should know the podcast is split into two different parts. The first part is called The Calm, and we will only be discussing episodes we've already watched. So season 1 episodes, season 2 episodes, and all the season 3 episodes up through episode 17. Just in case this is your first time watching Lost and you want us as like a companion podcast, we think that's great. And we don't want to spoil you. So if you look down at your podcasting device, you'll see time codes for The Calm and another time code for The Storm. That's the second part of the podcast. It stands for The Storm of Spoilers, which means we can talk about this episode of Lost, this Desmond episode of Lost, which deals with the future, with some actual knowledge of the future of these characters, because we could talk about the episode in the context of all six seasons of Lost and the fandom that has bridged the gap between the end of the show and now. Don't want to spoil you if you don't want to be spoiled, but if you like that type of discussion, we've got some content for you today. You could also support the podcast even more than you are right now just by listening to us and joining us on this momentous rewatch at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you can subscribe to us at monthly at different monetary levels, and each level gets different or more content added on top of it. At the lowest possible level, you get access to our Slack, where things are happening all the time. We're rewatching things. We're chatting with each other. We're making sure everybody is staying safe during these quarantine COVID times. You also get access to some bonus podcast content. In this case, at the lowest level, you get access to Feels Like the First Time, which is a podcast series Joanne has been doing, where she has been introducing people to different pop culture milestone movies that they might have missed out on. Except, we flipped the script recently for Feels Like the First Time. Joanna, what have you been introduced to recently?
Well, if you are already a subscriber to our Patreon at any level, you will already be in possession of the first installment of what we're calling this week Feels Like a Gay Time, where Kristen Russo is guiding me through three gay or gay-jacent, as she calls them, films that I have not seen. And they are Lost and Delirious, But I'm a Cheerleader, and Jennifer's body. So we had a really fun chat. Kristen administered a gay quiz to me, and I scored really well. I'm really proud of myself.
Nice.
I love doing well on quizzes. But then, anyway, Kristen took all my gay points away from me today. in a text message, because there's a story I tell in the podcast about some girl that I went to high school with, and how, like, as we were discussing these movies on the podcast, I had a realization about that girl and a question that she asked me, and I was was texting Kristen photos of the girl from my high school yearbook to be like, do you think, and Kristen's like, Joanna, the fact that you didn't know that, I'm taking away all your gay points. And I was like, great.
No.
So I'm back to zero, guys. But yeah, tune in to Feels Like a Gay Time. It's really fun. Probably even if you're not gay, but definitely if you are. And I'm not gay, and I had a great time. So join us for that. And we will be live watching those movies in our Slack over this Labor Day weekend. We're starting on Thursday. You can find all of that information at stormpodcast.com. We've got a calendar on there. And all the movie viewings that we're doing are on there. All the live watches that we're doing are on there. All the mailbags, all the storm chasings, everything that we do, all on that calendar, kept up to date by our lovely producer, Diana. So that is one way you can keep track of us. You can also follow us on Twitter at Storm Podcasts. That's where you can vote on our Jungle of Kissery poll, et cetera, et cetera. It's a really good time. Or you can always email us, host at stormpodcast.com, or you can always leave us a review. These are all the ways in which you can communicate with us. So I'm going to hit you with a couple of reviews, then we're going to read an email, and then we're going to move on. All right. So this email or this review comes from Real Catholic Mama from the United States. And she writes 5 stars for the intro song alone. 5 stars. That beat interspersed with quotes from the show is a work of art on its own that gets me pumped for cleaning my house or walking the neighborhood every week as I enjoy thoughtful discussions, interviews, and little known behind the scenes tidbits that enhance the timeless television series. So, that theme song, nice. correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, the beat was given to us by DJ Empirical, right?
That's correct, yes.
And then you mix up the quotes sort of every season, right?
Yeah, we're going to keep laying them on top of each other until they're madness.
All right, so that's the... Okay, and then this one is 5 stars from Crispy Biscuit. And it is... only an incel would pick on Joanna Robinson.
Wow. That is a headline.
I was going to wait until I caught up with season 3 to leave a review, but after listening to the 23rd Psalm and the unnecessarily personal attack on the co-host, I felt compelled to offer an alternative opinion. I won't repeat the rude things that this sad person said, but aside from being qualitatively false, the guilty review's logic is also patently absurd. If military service is a prerequisite to getting a gun, this is probably me complaining why Kate didn't have a gun. How come Jack, Locke, Sawyer, and every other deviant Y chromosome on the island gets one? No questions asked. This podcast is great in all the ways that matter. I love Dave's theorizing, Joanna's critical analysis, Neil's cuddly teddy bear demeanor, the interviews, and the connections the hosts make between the show and the contemporary, as well as present state of American culture. Lost is as close to perfect as a television show can get, and The Storm is as close to perfect as a rewatch podcast can get. Keep up the good work. So those are 2 very nice reviews. Thank you so much. We love nice reviews. We'll take mean reviews. Just leave us a review and we will read it. Okay. And then lastly, I want to hear, we got so many emails this week. Thank you guys so much. After like a little 2-week drought, you guys were like, email. Yes. A lot of them are very long, so we're gonna have to spread them out. I will conserve them for future, episodes, but let me hit you with one here in the comm, that, y'all can listen to. And then we will revisit some in the storm section. So this comes from Caleb, and mostly, I'm sorry, I should have prepped you guys with this, but like mostly I just wanted to show you Caleb's cool tattoo, and I'm going to try to describe it. This is really good podcast content. I've just emailed it to both of you, so I will read some of Caleb's email while you guys look at that. I have the lost numbers 4, 8, 15, etc. written on my wrist and going up my arm. The first three numbers are written in Arabesh, Star Wars language, and the final three are written in Sindarin, one of the elven languages from Lord of the Rings. They are my three favorite franchises, and so to be honest, I think the tattoo perfectly encapsulates loss, as is its own little mystery. It's safe to say I'm very happy with my only tattoo, as I am happy with loss as a whole. Yeah, so I just think this tattoo is really cool looking.
Yeah.
And I was just grateful that Caleb shared it with us.
That is cool looking.
I mean, I think that's a really cool idea. As I think I've mentioned on this podcast several times, always have struggled. The idea of it, it's not really the pain of getting a tattoo that I worry about. It's the permanence of it. And deciding something to permanently put on your body. I think whatever I would choose would be probably somewhat pop culture related. But it's so hard to choose. But this is a very creative way to get like three things that you love in like one tattoo.
It is the cool thing is the third thing's the mystery thing. Because if I were to see this gentleman, I'd be able to identify those things. But I don't, you know, read Arabesh or Elven like fluently. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be able to actually pick up the lost reference, which is actually kind of cool.
The numbers, man. The numbers will get you. I wonder if Caleb has had any luck or good luck, bad luck based on having the numbers tattooed.
And they're just like beautiful. Like they're just, it's a beautiful tattoo. It's really cool. Like the lettering is gorgeous. And yeah. So thanks for sharing with Caleb. Thanks for listening. I approve of your tattoo and also your bedspread. So thank you. Was that creepy? I don't know. I was in his photo. Okay. So yeah. So that's, those are the reviews. Those are my emails. And that is it from me.
Neil. What happened this week on the island?
In this episode, Catch 22, which was directed by friend of the pod, Stephen Williams. It was written by Jeff Pinkner and Brian K. Vaughn.
Hey!
It aired on April 18th, 2007. It takes place on days 84 and 85 on the island. In flashbacks, we learn about Desmond's time at a monastery, becoming a brother. And about the young woman named Ruth, who he drunkenly bailed on a week before they were scheduled to be married, prior to entering said monastery, and about how getting kicked out of said monastery led to meeting Penelope Widmore, or Penny, to her friends. Back on the island, it's time to assemble a crew and figure out the jigsaw puzzle of Desmond's visions. After witnessing the vision in the cold open, complete with a gruesome Charlie death, we watch as Desmond recruits Hurley, Jin, and Charlie to head out into the jungle of mystery. Don't worry, Jin loves camping. And Desmond believes that his vision leads to Penny literally falling from the sky. It's all very mystery. Elsewhere in the camp, Sawyer is creeping into Kate's tent uninvited, a move that doesn't go so well at first until later after Kate sees Jack and Juliet having a quiet date night, and now we evolved from a triangle to rival pairs or a quadrangle. Either way, a ping pong match ensues. It all ends with the reveal that while someone did fall from the sky and they did have a picture of Desmond and Penny in her backpack, she was not, in fact, Penny. Fun fact, despite fate's best attempts, Charlie continues to live. This week's calm question, I think we should finish the conversation that Charlie and Hurley were having right before Charlie's gruesome
It's a flash under?
Into the future. Yeah. has anyone ever come in up with the answer as to who would win in a foot race, Superman or the Flash? Joanna, you take credit. I feel like, wasn't this in a movie at some
point? You know
point?
What's a really... it's happened in the comics before, but something that's a really fun fact is that Dave and I have had this discussion on, like, the first episode of Thought Bubble, I think. Right, Dave? Or, like, really,
we did.
Really. It was, like,
it was like, let's go through all the times they've raced each other and what that means who would win.
All right.
Yeah. But do you remember...
I've come to the right place for the answer here.
Do you remember the answer we came upon finally? Because it was a long time ago, and we were thinking of a lot of different flashes.
It was the same episode where someone asked us, like, vibranium versus adamantium. I feel like... at that time also, like, I knew so little about The Flash because I think I hadn't, like, watched much of The Flash TV show and I wasn't familiar with the comic. So I was, like, mostly just taking your word for it. But I still think it's Superman. That's what I think. But the question is, like, they did it in The Flash, but it wasn't, was it Superman? Or was it someone who's,
it
like,
might have
Superman?
Been Supergirl.
Oh, Supergirl. Yeah, yes. Yeah, Supergirl versus The Flash, they did. Mm-hmm. And it was like, she can fly, but is flying cheating? Like, what are the rules
here? Who would win in a foot race if they both had to run? I think that's really the question that Charlie and Hurley are trying to solve throughout this episode.
I think, didn't Supergirl win? So I think Superman wins. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just too much power with Superman, in my mind. Dave, what do you
think? I think The Flash wins. He has a connection to the Speed Force. Well, I think both have one, Barry Allen and Wally West, but definitely Barry Allen, I think, would be able, because, like...
Because it's connected to speed itself?
Like, the Speed Force is, like, a god... level force. It's different than like being an alien that's powered by a yellow sun. Like, Superman has what seems to be like limitless powers, but if you put him under the light of a different sun, he has zero powers, whereas the Flash is able to tap into like this god level unlimited force of energy and speed, and I think the Flash ultimately is faster.
Wow.
But I mean,
so there it is.
I think the DC stance is that Superman is capable of winning and lets Flash win, is I think the way they came down on it. Mm. Like, if Superman and Flash were to all out, where Superman would win, but it's never happened because Superman's never been like, what I need to save the day is beat my friend in a foot race.
Mm. Oh, so Superman's too pure of heart.
He's too
basically,
evolved.
Yeah.
He's not petty enough to defeat the Flash.
He's yeah. too smug. He's too smug.
But
Superman is kind of a dick.
Yeah. Well,
but
it's interesting.
But a fun episode for Brian K. Vaughan to have written, given that he's a comics guy. He's not really, I don't think of him really as a superhero guy, but he's a comics guy.
Yeah. Well, they talk about him on the official Lost podcast this week, because I guess this is his first co-credit on the series. And they're like, yeah, it's like the Ex Machina and the Why the Last Man guy. He's writing for us now. And I don't remember at the time being that aware of it, so I'm glad the showrunners were shouting it out even that far back. Because guess what still should be a TV series, but we're waiting patiently for is Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man.
We'll get there. But in this episode, the Y stands for the end of Christianity, as we get a Desmond flashback. And I just looked down at the notes, and there was literally a Y in front of me, so I took that as the only segue we needed. I figured my voice will be the
Y at the end of Hurley, or the Y in the middle of Sawyer.
Or the why at the end of the audience's questions about how the future works with Desmond's flashes. There's a lot of things. But I do think this week we get a flashback that is weak to an on-island story that is very strong. And I'm going to say the flashback is weak because it thinks that Christian symbolism is the same as posing like the actual question through action. So we're supposed to be contrasting the flashback to the question of sacrifice for a belief, because that's what Desmond thinks that he's doing, leading Charlie into the jungle. He thinks he's going to be able to see Penny again, but he has to sacrifice Charlie, and ultimately he's not able to do it. And in the flashback, he brings up, you know, the biblical story of sacrificing your son and whether or not that's a good sacrifice to, you know, be even asked for, and what the meaning of sacrificing is. And I don't think the actual story works until Penny shows up to get some wine, in which case I feel like we could have jettisoned a lot of the Christianity angle.
Yeah, because what does he sacrifice in the flashback? His 6-year relationship?
Yeah, for like a he felt like he got a call and ran off on
the monastery,
Ruth,
and it went terribly, and that's why he meets Penny, I guess, is what this flashback is teaching us.
Yeah, I mean, that says more, even your description of it says, I think, more about like the unknowability of fate than it does necessarily about sacrifice. So mm-hmm. I feel like every time this, you know, they give the girl he runs away with the name Ruth, notoriously kind, and something else that we could talk about in the storm, and speaks about, like, you know, the sacrifice of Isaac, I believe, right? And
Abraham
and sacrificing Isaac. Yeah. Or being told to sacrifice Isaac. And I get why they did it, but I also think this is one of the times Lost leans into Christianity when it doesn't necessarily need to, because I feel like Desmond's already, by the nature of Desmond's storyline and where he is in season 3, he's already wrestling with like this fate idea, and like, can he change it, or does certain things change, you know, is he changing the picture on the puzzle box? Or is everything eventually going to, you know, find its way anyway, like Eloise told him back in his previous episode this week? It just feels like Monk, there was a lot of jokes in our live watch, we were watching it, that it was a flashback that explained the origin of why Desmond says brother. And it feels like, for like the first two-thirds of this flashback, that's what this is. And I think it's just because the Christianity metaphors don't hang as well on what's actually happening on the island and with Desmond, unless I have read this wrong.
Although shout out to Eloise popping up on brother, what's that guy, what's the other
Campbell.
Guy's name, brother
Campbell.
Campbell's desk in that photo.
She's ensuring the timeline goes the way it needs to.
She's the Libby of every Desmond episode. She keeps popping up.
I think a lot of my thoughts on this are stormy, so I'm not sure how much I can dive into it. But I do have an argument for why it matters that it's this
monastery plot with this girl.
No, not the monastery plot. No, Ruth is unnecessary. The monastery is pretty unnecessary. I just don't mind that Abraham and Isaac, that it gets like very Judeo-Christian about its questions here. Mm. And we can talk about that. But
yeah. Well, I don't mind that in regards to even the stuff that we've seen between Desmond and Charlie, because that's like, as Desmond sort of points out in this episode, that's sort of the idea that he's fighting. He's been fighting all along with regard to Charlie, you know, is like, at what point do I have to let Charlie go? And you know, today isn't the day for sure.
Well, it almost seemed like it was the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of folks in the live watch, also expressed some, I don't know, some loud groans about how cruel this episode is to Desmond in the end, like the whole idea that it makes us think that it's going to be Penny all the way to the end, and then it's not. It's mm-hmm. someone different who we don't know yet.
Those are
just kind of valid. Where it's like they really do sort of pound away at Desmond in this episode, and then it all for it not to be Penny.
Also, like, what a horrible gift he has, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, to constantly see Charlie die. I think that you mentioned, Dave, that Desmond's idea of how this flash works, like he has to recreate it exactly or else it won't be Penny who arrives. And there's a part of him that believes that because he saved Charlie, that's why it's not Penny in the helmet. Or
correct.
At least you can sort of extrapolate that. And that is such a sort of slightly bonkers thing to come up with, you know what I mean? Like, that's not really how his flashes have been working, so why does he think that's how it's gonna work now or whatever? But I think that Henry Ian Cusick's performance, his intensity, his desperation for Penny sells it for me in a way that I don't really, you know, feel the need to question it.
Well, and they know it's strong, and it the Iron Island stuff works. And like, cause it, and it shouldn't, because you're right. They've changed the way that Desmond seems to feel about it, which they say is for Penny, which, you know, love us some Desmond and Penny. So sure, you could break your rules. But then even more so, they put him with like three of the most likable traveling companions, so that in every one of those situations, which should be fantastic situations, Jin ghost story, Superman and Flash being faster, like, you know, Hurley making observations about the island, should all be great, but Desmond's the asshole in that situation, because we know what he's like leading it to.
He's a conflicted asshole. I don't think he's an asshole.
Well,
I
think he just seems like he's having a panic attack.
The whole time. Yeah, he's just like, I've been put in an impossible situation, a catch 22, and I believe that the thing I want most in this world I can only get if I sacrifice this kind of annoying British guy, but like, you know, my morality won't let me do that. And so then I'm going to lose the thing that I want most in this world because I, you know, so like, is he an asshole? Like, I don't think that makes him the asshole. I think that makes him, that puts him in a really, really tough bind, a catch 22, you know?
I mean, it's a real man of faith moment that, you know, as much as we miss John Locke in these episodes where we're not seeing him, Desmond, you know, his faith in the validity of his visions, I guess, is what he's working on. And then they are trying to layer in some of that.
He at least has some proof that his visions are real.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this point, Desmond has every reason to believe that all these visions are real. But, and yeah, at the beginning of the episode, we do see the picture in the vision, right?
Yeah, so we know that's what he's going for.
That's really what sort of he keys in on, it, and that sort of drives him down that path to believe this has to be Penny.
Who else would have the photo? You know what I mean?
How could that photo possibly have ever been reproduced?
Well, I mean, you say that sarcastically, but he got it from like a rando street vendor, and then like I think he's supposed to be the only one with a copy. So
Penny didn't have one.
I think they had one photo.
There's two photos.
Okay.
Oh.
No, I mean, okay. I know there's are two photos, but I'm just saying, like,
this comes from the official podcast. Penny has a copy and Desmond has a copy.
Okay.
And we know that.
So the street vendor was able to produce two photos immediately. Sure. Somehow.
Well, what they're.
He's just really good at his job.
Okay.
The way they trace it back is Desmond has his copy. And so, therefore, whoever has the photocopied copy must have gotten that photocopy from Penny's copy at some point.
I understand that that's the implication. I'm just saying, how are there two in existence given who took that photo and where? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I understand the implication that this must be a Xerox copy of like Penny's half of the best friend locket necklace, her corresponding photo. I'm just saying logically it shouldn't exist because they got it from a street photographer who's not going to be like, let me develop another copy for you, right? I don't know how street cameras work. Do they work different from real cameras? I don't know.
From real cameras.
But in terms of the flashback, like I agree with you. I think it's 85% useless. And then there's like some good Judeo-Christian man of faith stuff that I would like to talk about in the storm. And then there's the Penny scene, which is just, it's so good that like I don't care that the rest isn't great.
They have so much chemistry that you don't even notice the terrible background.
Watching these two little puppies just smile at each other, and then the way it's cut over, you know, trying to get the body down from the tree, and you think maybe she's dead or whatever. It's incredible. Actually, I learned a word from Lostopedia this week. Maybe you guys want to talk amongst yourself while I find it. Hold on.
Is it also that he's like in a monk in the back in the flashback, and we don't have any female members of the adventure team, so he's like with his brothers? Maybe I'm digging too deep on this episode. Maybe I should take it at the superficial level that it's presented to me at. It's like go ahead.
Maybe. I think also it's just to offset, like, imagine how sad and stressful this episode would be if it was just Desmond and Charlie going off into the jungle. And it was just like a two-man back and forth where Desmond's constantly just trying to have to convince Charlie. So I, Like, I love that I wrote in the notes that this is a Hurley and Desmond team up episode in my mind, because mm-hmm. Hurley's the first one he has to convince. And I like that Charlie's sort of like the last one and, you know, the most reluctant, because it really does show that Desmond's like way down an emotional hole about all of this. But then also the writer's room's decision to include Jin, you know, and just for the fact that Jin loves camping.
Yes.
And wants to tell, and they wanted to do a Jin ghost story scene, absolutely worth it. So yeah, I mean, whatever the reason, it works really well to use these four characters for this, because at the end, when they are what we perceive as them pulling Penny down from the tree, it's like so sad that it's like these four guys that are going to, or these three guys that are going to stand there and watch Desmond go through potentially like the worst moment, you know, if she's dead. And so you're really rooting for it not to be Penny at the end, I think. I don't know. I was the first time around, and it wasn't.
So the word that I learned is peripeteia, which I had never heard before. Peripety, I guess, is the anglicized version of that. And it kind of just means, like, it's a fancy word for plot twist, but I thought it was really nice. But basically, like, the whole episode is pushing you towards this idea that that's Penny, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then, dun, 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 it's not Penny. Who is it? We don't know. But she knows Desmond's name and she has his photo. So that's interesting.
Yeah. If we weren't on the island of mystery, I would have said it was never Penny. But knowing what I know about Lost, maybe it was. Maybe Desmond.
You never know who it's going to be.
Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting that I never put together is this idea that, like, the copy of Catch 22 is in Portuguese and the guys at the station who call Penny at the end of season 2 are speaking Portuguese.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So maybe Penny does know Portuguese.
I would hope
just,
so.
Just sort of like, what's the connection there?
Yeah.
Is this young woman working with those men who were at the outpost, wherever they were?
Oh yeah, we got a million mysteries mm-hmm. coming out of this this final moment mm-hmm. Where this new character has been dropped, because it's been a while since we've added a new character from the outside, you know.
That's true. Actually,
I mean, Juliet came, that call came from inside the house, I guess, but
Juliet's been with us all season, you know.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
as another right. and
you're right.
It's been 17 episodes. Speaking of our new arrival, she wins two corner awards this week. Our Jungle Mystery moment for her knowing Desmond's name, that mm-hmm. seemingly out of nowhere, despite being a stranger. And of course, she wins the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award.
Of course she does.
She literally falls from the sky.
Uh-huh. Anytime you fall from the
Boone
sky.
Wishes.
Yeah. You're going to get that Memorial Falling Down Award.
Yeah, she's got Saphone too. Whoa. Yeah. Like, it's out of juice, but Saphone, that's some possibilities there. Mm-hmm. Seems like it might go places.
Yeah, get Saeed to hook it up to a giant human-sized hamster wheel and power that thing back up again.
Yeah, I mean, her bag alone is the Jungle Mystery moment. Mm. Is a runner-up. Because you get the book, you get the photo, you get the Saphone, which I'm sure will come in handy at some point.
We haven't talked about, other than Neil's recap, we haven't talked about our B plot at all.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, the B plot is the rest of the episode, which, Joanna, what happens in the B plot in this episode?
So Sawyer is like, hey, Kate, did you tell Jack? And she's like, doesn't matter, he already knows. Make me a mixtape. And then Kate's like, hey, Jack. And Jack's like, can I use that spoon? And Kate's like, yeah, let me lick it for you. And then Jack's like, okay, bye. And then he goes and he's like, ha, 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 Juliet. And Kate's like, oh, what the fuck? That hurts my feelings. And then she busts into Sawyer's tent, even though she was mad that he busted into her tent. And then she sexes him and he's like, you're crying. And she's like, shh, shh. And they have sex. And then the next day, Sawyer and Jack are playing ping pong. Great scene. And Detective Sawyer on the case figures out why Kate was both crying and horny the night before. And he later confronts her about it whilst presenting her with a Phil Collins tape that he has stolen from Bernard. Fun fact, this is the first mention of Bernard all season. Mention! Isn't that nuts? First mention
not
of Bernard.
Not just that we haven't seen Bernard.
We still don't see him. We got all that Nikki and Paolo, no Bernard with the hey. Anyway, he's like, hey, Freckles, you don't have to lie, you just ask. But he's hurt and wounded inside because he's Sawyer. The two best Sawyer moments, I think, are that part where he's sort of at the end pretending like, hey, it's fine, we can just have sex, I don't care. But he's obviously like, his big gooey heart is like doing things. But even more so in the ping pong game when he's like really hurt. And Jack's like best two out of three, and he just like drops that like Alabama smarm like mass, just like, you know, sure thing, let's go. And you're just like, ah, oh, Sawyer, ah. So yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, no, I like that description. It hit a lot of the points that I probably would have left out otherwise, but all important and all definitely happened.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is one of the B plot really starts out kind of rough. And then once they get to that ping pong game, it's good stuff. I don't know why I'm more interested in sort of, it's not even the Jack part of it. It's just the Sawyer's whole emotional journey of this episode is fascinating to me. And Josh Holloway, again, in this middle of late season three run that we're in here, continues to just crush what seem like really tangential wheel spinning side plots that have not a whole lot going on in them.
This is his secret weapon, or maybe not so secret weapon. Like, he's good on a mission, but just stick Sawyer on the beach and it's like mango poker, it's kissing babies, it's whatever it is. Josh Holloway's like, oh, I got you. We're going to do this. It's going to be so charming. Also, there's going to be some pathos involved. Can I stare off into the distance and think about Kate? Great. I can do it.
Well, so, I think because it's a B plot, I forgot when we were rewatching what season where he steals the guns and is like, I'm your villain, sheriff. And I was like, oh man, I forget how he like gets back with this, you know, with the Losties. And now I'm seeing like, oh, it's like several episodes of B plot of him slowly crawling his way back to a position of respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm far more interested at this point in Sawyer's sort of reluctant return to society, I guess, on the beach, and his reluctant leadership of said beach society, than I am in the romantic quadrangle, you know, because it's like, okay, I mean, I get it. This is, you know, the Kate and Sawyer and Jack thing was a thing that we were doing in season three, but you know, I mean, I think the just Sawyer being. Being the camp's dude is far more interesting.
I also got to say, I've been on dish duty on a camping trip, and something that you don't do is wait until like it's dark to do the dishes.
Yeah.
So Kate doing ocean dishes after dark, that seems like some real poor planning.
Oatmeal, like, be careful.
Like, oatmeal ocean dishes, like that stuff is sticky. This is a bad scenario. She drew the shortest straw this week. Poor Kate. We should note, not to be a wet blanket about it, but like I believe this is the other scene that Evangeline, when we talked about Evangeline Lilly and her discomfort with the way in which she was undressed this season on Lost. I think this is the other scene when, you know,
it is very leery.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Even though like it lampshades it by calling it out and her being like, my eyes are up here, like the camera still, you know, runs up and down her. So yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks,
and there's
guys.
There's another one later in the episode too, when she's like bent over at the water thing right before. There's a couple leery moments in this episode that it's like, I mean, you didn't have to.
Steven.
I mean, it seems like a weird thing to reorient the gaze that way, because I know, I know how Sawyer feels about Kate, and I spend the rest of the episode from, like, Kate's perspective. So, male gaze decision is a weird direction to go there, guys. But hey,
yeah, maybe, it's not like we learned anything about his attraction to her,
right?
We know
it's not like never seen that before. In which case, like, it's still not a great thing, but at least you could make an argument and not feel embarrassed about yourself.
I always think of, there's this commentary that David Tennant did for an episode of Doctor Who, where, like, it's series two of the new Doctor Who, where Billy Piper, who is, like, super attractive, is tied down and she's wearing a super tight shirt, and the way the, like, camera's shooting her or whatever, David Tennant's like, yep, that shirt, that was for the lads at home. Yes. That's what I always think of. I'm like, that shot, that was for the lads at home and the ladies, I guess, who like that too. You know, everything. So, like, yeah. It's just, whatever. Yeah.
It's weird. But, you know, more Sawyer shirtless digging, less whatever that was.
More ping pong.
More ping pong.
Recreational activities.
Yeah, more sweaty Jack and Sawyer, just like... going at it. Should we do the kistery?
The kistery. It seems like a kistery charged segment of the podcast.
Yeah, all right. So listen, last week on our Jungle Kistery Moment, this is something you can vote on over on our Twitter, and you can submit candidates during the live watches that we have on Saturdays in our Slack. But last week, the results were thus. This was, of course, I don't remember. What was last week's episode called? One of them. All right. So Ethan in the suit, nobody was here for it. No one was feeling the Mapother energy. So 7.5% of the vote went to Ethan in the suit. Jack and Sawyer, who, spoiler alert, will make a return this week, 13.3% of the vote. The others in khaki, 15% of the vote, but with a resounding, maybe our most landslide victory outside of a Desmond and Penny poll, is Juliet Sawyer and Saeed, 64.2% of the vote. Nice. I don't know if that's because the other candidates were not great, or that thruple was just so strong.
There's also a lot of big thruple energy because we're watching Black Sails in the Slack, so, you know, our folks are just in that mindset, right?
And why not three?
We're just asking the question. Why not Juliet Sawyer and Saeed?
He's very good.
So, this week, we've got a few nominees. All right. So, Jack and Sawyer make a return. This is from Amy. The ping pong game was very sweaty and very flirty, I think. You know, and especially when, mm-hmm. like, he sort of holds up the paddles. That's a great shot. Lovely. Love it. So... Jack and Sawyer, that's from Amy. Gin and camping, that's from Vera. I actually think she said gin and the flashlight, but I'm going to broaden it to just gin and his enthusiasm for camping in general. Also, I love that when we were watching that scene where he's telling the ghost story in Korean, which is so good, you know which story he's telling because it's the hook hand story. Yeah.
Everyone who's gone camping has heard the hook hand story.
Like, Hurley understands a little Korean, I guess, and that's really fun to know. But, like, also, I understood that story because it's the hook hand story. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and be boring and throw Sawyer and Kate in there because, like, they are the ones who do the most smooching in this episode. And, like, outside of the Leary shot, there's, like, the makeout scenario.
So what you're suggesting is, did the people get what they want this episode?
I mean, it's not that often that we see people have sex on this island.
Kate did have she did get a mixtape. She got what she wanted. So.
She got the best of Phil Collins, which sounds like a great time to me. She needs to find a way to play it, but, like, when she does, look out. There's something in the air tonight. Hold on. All right. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, this is Adam just trying to take the easy win with a Desmond Penny nomination. So,
oh, can they be defeated?
They do
this
technically kiss
be tough.
in a flashback sort of thing. We see a Desmond and Penny kiss. So... Desmond Penny versus Sawyer and Kate. That's a tough We'll see. May the best Smoosher win.
You know, I really want Jack and Sawyer to win, but also I really want Jin and Camping to win. We have not seen Jin come alive in a while.
In an episode with an actual love quadrangle, Jin and Camping runs away with Jungle and kissed her.
Yeah, nobody wants to vote for Julia and Jack and their oatmeal date, their fireside oatmeal date. Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, that's Kistery this week.
Nice.
Excellent. You want to run through the other corners we got before we start storming it up here?
Oh, sure. Are we already there? Okay.
I mean, we don't have to be. We could talk about ping pong and love quadrangles.
Book club is clearly Catch 22.
Absolutely.
The Joseph Heller book.
In Portuguese.
Sawyer is also reading something, and I didn't catch what it was, and Lospita didn't even have it, so I was like, oh, surely Lospita will have it for me, but they didn't, so...
It's probably Atlas Shrugged for the 30th. What does he have on the...
Watership Down. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Or Atlas... Or Fountainhead. I think it's Fountainhead.
Sorry. the three Watership Sawyer Down classes. Is the one that keeps coming up. It's like, I think that's the one Sawyer has reread the most.
He loves those bunnies. Anyway, so Catch-22, Catch-22, the phrase Catch-22 comes from that book. Desmond is obviously in a Catch-22. And then there's also this idea that, like, the characters in Catch-22 are on an island base that they want to get off of, and they're not, like, physically or metaphysically trapped there, but they're trapped there by their circumstances. So that's just sort of a fun connection for book club. And then Accent Corner, let's do this real quick. We're going to do some Scots. We're not going to do Dear Ruth. Joanna Boole plays Ruth because her accent's so bad that Lostopedia put it on their main page. They're like, clearly this actress is from Bristol, full stop. So we're not going to quiz you guys on that. But we're going to hit Brother Campbell. Brother Campbell, the one who inspired Desmond to say brother, which is so stupid. I hate it so much. Anyway, but Brother Campbell himself is a fine character. But do we think that, where do we think he's, this actor is from? Let's start with Dave.
Brother Campbell is a bit player in Northeastern American theater and occasionally does television parts.
Okay. Neil?
That was really specific. I'm going to just go with British.
He's an Irish-born actor.
Damn it. I almost went with Irish. Damn it.
So that's Brother Campbell. And then we've got Ruth's brother. Good old Derek. Good old lightning fist Derek.
Mostly lets his fist do the talking.
Where is Derek and his fist from? Neil, are those Scottish fists?
No, that guy looks like he's from London. Okay. British.
Right. To me. He's from London. All right. Dave?
I'm going to stick with Neil on this one. That's a British gentleman. British gentleman.
I mean, I can get where you're coming from. He's got that cleft in his chin, but Jack Maxwell is in fact an American. So there we go.
Oh, he does the theater.
We've got all sorts, but none of them are Scottish, except for Henry Ian Cusack, who's also not really Scottish, but at least his dad was. So there you go. That is our accent corner for this week.
Not great.
Basically, Ruth is like the full Billy and Bane of Scotland. That's what we're dealing with here.
She sounds like Kelly MacDonald, who's Irish, right? Isn't she?
No,
Irish?
She's Scottish.
She's Scottish. Scottish. She kind of does, though. I don't know. Maybe it's just that it sounds like a parody of Kelly MacDonald.
No, she's doing that dialect. She's trying to do that dialect. She's just not doing it well.
Would you? Yeah. Oh God, fucking tough break. Killed that movie. Anyway, Neil, do we have a Giacchino corner this week?
We do, and it's an interesting, fun fact, something to store for later. There's a motif in this episode, an action motif, I believe it's when Desmond is recruiting Charlie, or sort of in that scene. This motif comes back later on the season 5 soundtrack, and I'm going to tell you the title because, as far as I can tell, this is nonsense. it's not a spoiler. The soundtrack, eventually the track is called For the Love of Dame, D-A-M-E.
For the Love of the Dame.
Oh, the Dame.
So sorry. It's like,
for the Love of the Dame.
For the Love of the Game pun.
The Game, but Dame.
Yeah, punny score guy.
So, you know, that's what Desmond's doing it for, I guess.
Nice. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, comes from this hilarious part in the transcript. Charlie, right, but with all due respect, you haven't previously told Jin or Hurley they're going to die. Parentheses, Desmond flashes to see the arrow shoot at Charlie and go through his neck. And parentheses, Desmond, well, that's not going to happen. Not this time. Just bold-faced. I mean, he saves him. So, not that bad. But as far as obviously a lie goes, that's the interesting thing, is that we see the initial event flash as the cold open, and then occasionally we'll see them as flashes in the edit, but the flashes in the edit also expand to include flashbacks of Penny we've also seen. Flashes are interesting. These very story-based flashes. Where's Libby? Neil says she ordered some wine, and one of our listeners added it and then told Penny to order the same wine. So bringing Penny to some monastery wine just in time.
Yeah, I mean, I bet that ship, that boat that she gave Desmond eventually was stocked with that holy-ass wine.
Didn't it have the McCutcheon?
Mariah. Was he drinking McCutcheon in the bottom of the boat? That seems unlikely.
Was he drinking wine? I guess that seems slightly right.
I think he was drinking, like, Dharma booze.
Dharma booze. Official podcast check-in time. The Lost had an official podcast where the executive producers would answer questions from the Lost message boards. We've been tracking some. This is an interesting example where somebody actually brings a spoiler from a old website called LostSpoilers.com and gets it addressed directly on the podcast. I'll be reading Carlton Cuse. Neil will be reading Damon Lindelof. I start this week. Here we go. Okay, so this is one that you could answer that the fans will be very happy if you answer this.
Wow.
Then it starts. It says, Catch 22 trailer by Hugo Lost. 133 posts in the last 90 days. Locke looks like he's dying, ? With about 90 question marks after that. And I was told by the Lost fan that the season will end with a war with at least two or three Lostaways getting life-threatening injuries, and two of them will die, and one of them is Desmond. If you go to LostSpoilers.com, Catch-22 trailer, the first video should be it, and Jin getting stabbed, and Hugo gets shot.
I will not say on the record that these events are not going to occur, and that there won't be a war in the finale. And that several of our, you know, lovely Lostaways will have their lives threatened, if not taken. However, I'm not familiar with any of the scenes you just explained. So if they were to die, none of the ways that you describe, if we were to shoot Hurley, can you imagine what would happen?
That would be it.
Can you imagine?
It would be over.
Terrible.
And scene. Hurley's not going to be shot by the end of season 3. You heard it here first on the Lost Rewatch podcast.
I love the idea. There is a certain level of, like, I don't know, intimacy or that was enjoyed by Lost for a while there. Like, you know, through this podcast and through the way the creators, you know, especially Damon, was online a lot. And I really like that they played around with it. I mean, it got weird at the end there, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, we'll talk about that as we get there. But it was, they really did view this, especially as Lost came up and started to grow its fan base with online streaming and, like, being one of those first shows that were put on the internet to be able to watch. They engaged in a way that previously was rare.
Yeah,
I would say
it was on iTunes. It was really early on iTunes. You could be
this
watching
is a podcast
it on iTunes.
From 2007.
Yeah, it's back in the day before Serial was a thing, as they say now in podcast histories. All right, I think that's all we have to say without spoiling anything in the future. So we'll be back with the storm right after this.
All right, now is the time on the show where we like to thank our Spell Council Patreon subscribers there at the $10 level or above. We've got so many new folks, so thank you all for joining, upgrading, whatever you're doing. It's lovely to have you. So we want to shout out J.Ann Atwood, Christina Delacquila, Anna Burke, Christina Watkins, Derek Doc, Melanie Chu, Richard Sobel, Sam Padme, Laura Caruso, Anne Ledford, hi Anne, Ashley Warren, Christopher Renaud, John Costello, Sarah Wingo, hi Sarah, Gwendolyn Gardner, Stephanie Breitbach, Becky McMorrow, Matt Campbell, Bronwyn Beck, and Aaron. Thank you guys so much.
And I have some people to thank. Jillian Q. Johnson Arnold, Jeremy M. Johnson, Joe Torrance Fernandez, Aisha Glover, Kelly Edison, Tay, Kelsey Elmiger, Jennifer Barrett, Hayden Simpson, Grace Basington, Rebecca Glover, Liz Wilson, C.S., Paul Cole, Maya Finkelstein, Dialton Dane, New Sword of the Morning, I Should Check Out Some Miyazaki Sometime, Claire D., Sarah Holiday, and Javier Ernesto Fuentes. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Kristen Plant, Mark Marquez, Amanda Rhodes, Miranda Blankenship, Kyle Davis, Sean Mee, Matt Thompson, Davia Giannini, yeah, all right, there we go, Carrie Welby Solomon, Zoe Fuchs, Sharon Deegan, Marky Idea, Robin Meyer, Deborah Ackerman, Florence, Rick Russell, Renee, Nathan Mellahan, Jennifer, and Jenny V. Thank you all very much for being part of the Small Council.
And we're back in the storm, still lockless and listless over here in the storm.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Can I make the dumb joke I was going to make earlier about Desmond's ex-fiance?
Go for it.
You know, when Desmond left her at the altar, it was pretty ruthless.
Oh. Why was that a storm joke?
It wasn't. It just... I almost made it, and then I didn't, because I was like, that's pretty dumb to win, and the moment passed. And then you said lockless, and I was like, it was the universe telling me to make
a joke.
So,
the My Storm Ruth bit is Ruth famously helps Naomi get out of Moab, right?
Yeah.
So that's how we know the character's name that fell out of the tree, which we artfully did not say. we've been getting better at the beeps, if nothing else, while doing this podcast. Just being better staying on topic. Speaking of on topic, how do we feel about how time works here, given I think the little sting of Eloise in the picture at the end? Does that imply that Eloise set something right? Go ahead.
Here's my Abraham and Isaac and God thing again, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the storm, this idea of surrendering yourself to a God that has a plan, right? That's I think that's the story of Abraham and Isaac. It's a test of faith. But what is a test of faith if not you walking out the other side just being convinced that God has a plan and you should follow, you should just give yourself over to that plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Desmond says something similar to Penny when he's loading her car and he's like, well, apparently, God has other plans for me. And what's interesting is that, meeting Penny is part of what sets him off on the path to go to the island. And that is a plan that God being Jacob, has for Desmond. And so, yeah, him going to the monastery in the first place is putting him in a position to meet Penny in the first place. And can we see Eloise Hawking's guiding hand behind that? Probably, possibly. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, like, she's old, but also has a journal that says Desmond Hume is my constant in it. So she could have been there kicking things into line for self, you know.
She could have been the bartender at the bar the night that Desmond got so drunk that he threw away his 6-year relationship.
She was Ruth also at the same time. Mm-hmm.
She was the man with the rope around his thing that was the mistaken calling of Desmond.
She was actually Libby when she offered the boat to Desmond. That was just Eloise in a Libby mask.
Actually, if you look really close, she's in the wine crates at the end as well.
Oh, she's so compact, that Eloise.
I know. She just like fits in a box. It's great. You take her anywhere.
Is it supposed to like specifically suggest that she is the reason that he got kicked out of the monastery unceremoniously?
It's listed on Lustpedia as an unanswered question what her connection is to Brother Campbell. So it's a seed that they planted that they may not have ever really satisfactorily paid off.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does feel like she becomes, at least so far, sort of just like an avatar for Desmond's flashbacks. You know, she's just sort of there all the time.
She's like, can you change things? Ooh.
I have an interesting question. Maybe not that interesting. Do you think the actress Sonia Wolger is older or younger than Jeremy Davies?
Jeremy Davies, who plays Daniel Faraday.
Mm-hmm.
I would be surprised if he seems younger. I would be surprised if she's older, but in a good way, I guess. You know?
He seems younger. You'd be surprised if she was older?
Yes. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Dave, what do you think?
I'm going to say younger and maybe fall into the trap you've set for me.
I haven't said any trap. It's just like, to me, Daniel, I'll say this. Let's leave the actors' ages aside. Daniel Faraday seems younger to me than Penny does. Penny seems older than Daniel Faraday.
Yeah.
That is not actually the case. Jeremy Davis is 50. Sonia Wolger is 46. That wasn't meant to be a trap. I genuinely thought it was vice versa. But like, if Penny seems older than Daniel Faraday, then that would mean that Charles would have had to have had Penny with whoever he had Penny with before he impregnated Eloise. That sounds so weird. Impregnated. Mm-hmm. Before he and Eloise made Daniel. But, like, at any rate, Penny, if Eloise is manipulating things, Penny is the father of her son's daughter. She's not related to her, but like, she's connected to her in some way. So it's interesting. I mean, Eloise just like basically has no mercy and will use whoever she needs to use as a pawn for her time games.
is it possible you're saying that Penny was conceived on the island?
Oh, are you trying to feed me into Miracle Baby? No.
I'm trying to feed you Miracle Babies.
I was just thinking about, like, I've always thought of Penny as older than Daniel, but in terms of, like, who Charles is sleeping with when and whatever, it makes sense for Daniel to be older than Penny. Right?
Okay. I see where this was going.
I wasn't going to Miracle Babies, but let's go to Miracle Babies. We got a couple emails about our rundown of who the Miracle Babies are on the island. Folks, do you, Dave or Neil, want to guess how many Miracle Babies there actually are on the island?
It's probably way more than we said on the podcast last week.
Dave?
How many did we say on the podcast last week? Three or four?
I think three.
Yeah, three or four.
And then did we count Miles among those? I'm going to say seven.
Eight.
According to a pair of very lengthy emails we got, there are no Miracle Babies on Lost Island.
What?
Explain. Yeah.
Wow.
All of the characters, so the way we qualified Miracle Babies is all the characters we know who have been born on the island despite the known issue that plagued pregnant women there. This list included Jacob, the Man in Black, Ethan, Alex, and Aaron. However, this is from Jefferson. We got another long email too. But however, I don't think these characters actually qualify as Miracle Babies. First of all, pregnancy problems haven't always been something inherent to the island. In fact, I think it's a relatively recent development in the island's history. While I don't believe it's ever directly confirmed in the show, it's certainly heavily implied and accepted by canon as most fans that the pregnancy problems were caused by the release of the radiation during the incident. As far as we know, there were no pregnancy issues among the Dharma Initiative or the others before then. That means the problems didn't exist until 1977, so anyone born before then, Jacob the Man in Black, Ethan, would have been unaffected and so don't qualify as miracle babies. I'm going to put a pin in that for 1 second and say my only evidence to the contrary of that is in Dharmaville in the 70s, they would have the pregnant women leave the island to give birth off island. Now, you can just say, like, that was just because it was healthier for them to, they thought, for them to give birth in, like, a full-scale hospital on the mainland. And I could maybe see that. But, like, there was also Juliet's anxiety when she delivered Ethan. She's terrified because of, like, the issues with women in pregnancy on the island. And so that might just be her holding on to the future reality when in the past where she exists that's not true. But I'm just saying that's where I think I got the notion that, like, it predated the incident, because the others, the Dharma Initiative, would send their pregnant women off island to give birth. So anyway, okay, hold on. Mm-hmm. There's more. Secondly, it's definitely established in the show and the upcoming DOC that the problems occur at conception, so they also don't affect any child that was conceived off island. So that's like the, in next week's episode, the Sun episode, the question of whether or not it's, Jin is the father of the baby or not, is imperative for Sun to be honest about, because, mm-hmm. her baby might be imperiled if it was conceived on island versus off island, sort of thing. Does that make sense? Okay. So
yeah.
Even though Danielle and Claire gave birth on the island, both Alex and Aaron were conceived off island. So once again, they were unaffected and don't qualify. Sun did conceive Ji-Yun on the island, but was able to leave before the symptoms began, which Juliet says usually kick in during the second trimester. So she avoided the danger and was able to carry term. And I remember that too. It's like, it's really important for Sun to get off the island because she will be, like, you know, in mortal danger if she, a pregnant woman, stays on the island. So that mm-hmm. is true. As far as I know, there's no known pregnancy on the show that was A, conceived on the island, and B, after 1977, and C, successfully carried to term on the island. The island is home to lots of miracles, but miracle babies are not one of them, it seems. Please let me know if you think I'm mistaken or forget anything. Thanks for all your insights. And Walt was definitely in the computer, Jefferson. So...
Oh, hey.
Oh, wow.
Hey,
that's right. A really great selling point there at yeah. the end. I think I'm totally in on this now.
So, no miracle babies.
All right, I guess not.
Is
I
mean, the answer.
That's a pretty good argument for why there aren't.
I feel like this is series accurate, but once you get into the new man in charge, I feel like we have mentions that the polar bears are having problems being pregnant.
Whoa.
Implying that that would have still been a problem back in the Dharma Initiative days, which would...
I mean, we don't...
Add up to at least some possible miracle babies.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Dharma Initiative is studying... What is the Dharma Initiative doing before the incident? That
just
is
like,
the thing
just
that I'm
like anxious grooving, to revisit. Man, you know?
Right, they're just like namasteing everything. Yeah.
Well, I think
they're doing
psychological... namaste here and chill out for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah,
namaste here, do some LSD.
The new man in charge is the post-series bonus short that was released after the series was done, where they kind of wrap up some stuff. There's another Dharma instructional film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I believe it not only blames the pregnancy on the electromagnetism directly, but also says that it was affecting the polar bears, I think. I know for a fact it blames it on the electromagnetism, because I was always like, okay, that's a weird thing to just say after the series was over. But I also feel like the polar bear thing is a thing. Either way, I'm open to this idea that there are no human miracle babies that we know of.
So we'll keep a sharp eye out for anyone who might slip through a loophole here. But that is where we are. We also got a couple, like one of our storm prompts. Oh, we've got to do our calm prompt. Anyway, our calm prompt this week was going to be for any commies, like what your death Deadpool is for Charlie. We didn't do that, but and now we're in the storm, so it's too late, I guess. But maybe we'll remember to do it next week. And I don't know that we came up with a storm prompt, but our storm prompt sort of last week was like, what's the worst thing that Jacob did?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We got a really beautiful long email from Grant that I'm going to save because it is beautiful and long. And I'm going to save it for a rainy day when we don't have other emails. But this one comes from Matthew, and he says, on this week's episode, you raised the question of the worst thing that Jacob did and suggested that it was bringing people to the island. That in itself is a pretty big deal. Jacob bringing people to the island resulted in a lot of deaths. Over 200 people die in the crash of Flight 815. And since Jacob has been bringing people to the island for a long time, it's probably fair to assume that he has caused a lot more deaths over the years of people who he didn't care about because they weren't candidates. This is me, Joanna, inserting, like, yeah, everyone on the Black Rock except for Richard. Equally, he is pretty involved in Nadia's death off-island. He either lets her die or isn't interested in saving her, depending on how you look at it. I think we sometimes end up thinking of Jacob as the good guy, but I think he's pretty murky morally. He'll do whatever it takes to bring a new protector to the island. Fortunately, Hurley is going to do a better job. So,
I mean, that is true. They do crash the whole plane at the beginning of the show. At least when they come back, right? When they come back with Ajira Flight 317 later, it's just them.
It's almost just them.
It's almost just them.
Hurley tried to buy out every other seat on the plane so that it would only just be them.
Sure.
He missed a few.
That feels like something the show, like, you know, comes back to in a meta way. You know, I guess it's sort of fun. But yeah, I mean, it's true. Jacob, not a very efficient...
I think of him as an Old Testament God, and as we discussed with Abraham and Isaac this week, the Old Testament God is some real dick sometimes. So he will drown the entire world just to give Noah a fresh start. So, you know. Those are just emails. That sounds about right. Yeah, how effective, I mean, like, we're Stormy, we obviously know what's going to happen to Charlie, but, like, how effective do we feel like the whole, you know, appointment with death stuff with Charlie is, you know, right now?
I remember in the live watching the Calmies sort of react to it and being like, oh, is this the episode? And, like, being like, this is the episode. It's going to be inevitable. So I think maybe part of the reason this episode didn't play as well for me as it could have is that, you know, that tension of Desmond actually making the sacrifice is gone, because I know the sacrifices are flipped and it's so good that it like drowns this out as an exercise in getting Naomi to the island in a mysterious way. But I think it's playing for the Calmies pretty well. Like, I think, it's right on that level of interesting, but it's not as interesting, I think, to them as why did Locke's dad finally, like, end up in that room? And they're gonna take, like, you know, they took 4 episodes off from that since we're still not back to it next week. And so I think that, like, bringing this Charlie's in danger thing, they haven't brought it back enough that I've gotten tired of it yet, but I do think they keep it at the forefront of everyone's minds. I guess it's kind of limiting to Desmond, but they get to expand it here to include some freighter stuff because they got to bring the freighter in, so that helps.
Not Penny's parachute.
Not
guys.
Penny's parachute.
Yeah, I mean, I think they really do a good job, and you know, we gave them a hard time with Charlie stories in season 1 and season 2 because it felt like they were just sort of coming back to the same thing every time.
Yeah.
In this case, especially knowing where it ends, they really do a good job of just sort of like kind, you know, calmly coming back to it every once in a while, but then leaving it, because I think, you know, we don't really come back to I don't know. We don't really come back to the Charlie dying thing for a couple more episodes now, right? Because we get next week's about Sun. John Locke comes back the following week. Then we get a Ben episode. And then we're into finale territory, if my memory serves correctly.
Greatest Hits. Yeah, exactly.
And then Greatest Hits comes back, and it's like, all right, now we're... I don't know. When I was watching it the first time, this episode didn't feel like it was going to be the one. If I remember correctly.
But I'm just curious if they're believing, like, okay, it's inevitable, it's going to happen.
Sure.
But when, if it's a question of when or if for them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I think if I, you know, remembering back to my first time through Lost, it felt kind of inevitable. It was more a question of when, I think.
I mean, we'll talk about this in the season 3 finale, but like they definitely fooled me in the season 3 finale. I was like, mm-hmm. he's gonna make it.
Well, that's the thing is like it still kind of sneaks up on it's the, that yeah. episode's so good that it sneaks yeah. up on you, even though they do this several times where like Charlie's supposed to die. We get this whole episode where Charlie's supposed to die, and you know, they still get you. That's why they're good.
Then the question is, can you change the future? Better spend a whole season figuring that out.
One thing I do like in this episode is that the Flash is all about Charlie dying, right? Charlie dying and Penny arriving. Mm-hmm. And that's what the finale is about. It's about Charlie dying and Penny, not Penny arriving, but like, it's not Penny's parachute, it's not Penny's boat. I like that the cable is part of, you know, they follow the cable inland, mm-hmm. but they follow the cable down to where, like, that's where Charlie's going to die, down where the cable goes.
Mm-hmm.
So they just went the wrong
way. That cable from episode 7, they're like, let's put a cable here.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
And then they're forever following the cable into the jungle, and no one has yet, except for maybe Joanna, who, like, we can all agree was before her time, thought to wonder, where does this cable go into the water? Why is this cable going into the water?
Joanna followed the cable.
The ocean?
Joanna following the cable is much more noble of a way for her to have gone out than, I gotta swim. I gotta get my laps in.
I gotta do my calisthenics. No, she was exploring the cable because she's very smart. R.I.P. Joanna.
Excellent. I think that covers all our talking points for the storm, unless I missed something timey-wimey about fate, but I don't think so. Like, yeah, I said,
one pretty straightforward.
Yeah, once you've constant and then the end of the series, these episodes are kind of pointing in a direction that I want to get to faster.
It's kind of amazing how many Desmond episodes, like, Desmond has been sort of, or I'll say this, Desmond is often absent from episodes that aren't his own episodes.
Mm-hmm,
like, true. What is Desmond doing on the beach? Nothing. Sitting with all his buttons buttoned up the other day. Like, that's it. Like, Desmond isn't really part of the beach
he's
society.
He's hanging out at the galley.
He's just waiting for another Penny flashback.
It's like, come on, don't people want to know, like, why I say brother this week? People are like, yeah, I guess Desmond. Jesus. Oh,
just... Don't people want to know why I'm allergic to buttons? Damn it.
And then he peeks. And then at the end of the series, it'll be like, don't we want to know? And be like, get in that damn well, goddammit. Stay down there till we need you. Anyway, we got some time before that. We got the freighter on the way. Neil, what happens next week on Lost?
Well, next week we are watching D.O.C., which is a Sun episode, as Joanna mentioned earlier in the storm. It's a little Sun, little Juliet, little mystery, medical mystery, and some other stuff.
Yep. Was that the end of the phrase?
Yeah. The return, not maybe not literal, but like emotional return of our smooth boy.
It's smooth boy. Jai Lee.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that Jai Lee comes.
Zero, yeah. Zero, yeah. Zero wind resistance, Jai Lee.
It's a Maury Povich episode with Sun, Jin, and Jai Lee and Juliet. So.
Oh, yeah. Another quadrangle.
It's It's going to be great. Until then, where can people find your work around the internet? We'll start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Oh, hi. I'm back on VanityFair.com, so you can read my stuff there. You can listen to my Vanity Fair podcast, Little Gold Men, and Still Watching will be returning as soon. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, or you can listen to Dave and myself talk about The Legends of Korra, which is popping up on Netflix over on the Republic City Dispatch feed.
And Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at Film School Rejects. You can also get me in our Slack every day, 3 p.m. Central, Black Sails. We are in season 4. We are almost to the end. Also, soon, right when Black Sails ends, we're going to watch Muppet Treasure Island, which will be fun. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Rejects, at One Perfect Shot. Follow the show, at Storm Podcast, all these places. You'll find me.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You can listen to me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. That's also about pop culture. We talked about Bill and Ted Face the Music and the VMAs, and by happenstance of bad news, Chadwick Boseman this week. And we'll be continuing to talk about nonsense pop culture as this hellish year drags onward. But the important thing to me is, like, keep watching Lost, because we all are and will be found at the end of this series. But also, stay upright. Don't fall down by accident, not even as a joke. I don't, like, think pratfalls are something that our audience should be taking place in. Keep yourself safe. Wash your hands. Don't fall down.